Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, December 5th, 2014. President Obama has named a new boss for the Pentagon. Meet the new boss. Pretty much same as the old boss. We won't be fooled again. Ashton B. Carter is the president's choice to replace Chuck Hagel as Secretary of Defense. Hagel didn't even last 2 years. And Ashton B. Carter is a Defense Department insider. He worked there in the Clinton administration. He worked there more recently for Bob Gates, the Republican holdover in the first couple of years of the Obama administration. He was the number two to Leon Panetta when he was Secretary of Defense. And the revolving door that Ashton Carter has been through, fortunately, doesn't include defense contractors. He's been back and forth between Harvard and the Pentagon over the last 20 years. He's a hardliner, a pro-nuclear guy, and the most interesting, at least recent issue, where he is at odds with President Obama, is that he wanted the president to pull the trigger in 2013 for bombing raids in Syria. And if you recall, my characterization of that was that the president recklessly took us to the brink of war with Syria by pronouncing this red line about the use of chemical weapons. And then in August of 13, there was a chemical weapons incident that John Kerry and the U.S. government flatly blamed on the Assad government. And we learned later that that most likely was not true. And so Ashton Carter was eager for a war against Syria in 2013, and he now gets to be the manager of the president's perpetual war in Syria and Afghanistan. Now, one of the things I'm curious about is the argument from the White House is that he will sail to confirmation. And that has to be one of the critical reasons that they chose him. But I don't know about that. The Republicans in the Senate are going to be flexing their muscles. And Obama has an attorney general to confirm, plus this new defense secretary. So I think it'll be very interesting to see. Also, we learn that Ashton Carter, still getting used to his name. He's such a backbencher, I really don't know that much about him. But he is not eager to empty the prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And that's one of the problems the White House had with Chuck Hagel, is that Hagel was moving very slowly under pressure from the White House to release those who were declared free to leave 5 years ago. And we've seen a trickle of releases coming here at the end of the Hagel term at the Pentagon. But the combination of a new defense secretary who doesn't support closing Guantanamo and the actions of Congress, which tie the hands of the administration, the executive branch, because the newly passed, at least it was passed yesterday by the House, National Defense Authorization Act, that is the budget bill for the Pentagon, pegs in at $585 billion, and it includes restrictions, barring the transfer of prisoners from Guantanamo, and as I've said before, the idea that they cannot touch U.S. soil is just so ridiculous. There is also continuing language in the NDAA that permits the detention of Americans accused of terrorism without charge or trial at a military base. And it was declared unconstitutional by a federal district court in New York. We covered that in detail a year ago, Catherine Forrest. ruled in favor of Chris Hedges, Dan Ellsberg, and others regarding their objections to the NDAA detention clause. And that language remains in the defense authorization bill. Also at the Pentagon, Mr. Carter will face the ongoing problems of sexual assault in the military. And the lame duck Chuck Hagel fronted a press conference yesterday where he said the good news is that there was an 8% increase in the reports of sexual assaults in the military in 2014. Now, it's only 8% because the year before, the number of reports went up 50%. And these numbers are a little bit fuzzy, if you will, because most of the sexual assaults go unreported. So a poll of all the members of the military produced an estimate that the total number of sexual assaults of service members dropped from 26,000 to 19,000 in the past year, and that the number of reported cases came in at 5,983 this year compared to 5,518 last year. So it is, in fact, good news that more reports are being made, but we saw only a marginal decline in the total number of estimated sexual assault incidents in the U.S. military. And it remains unacceptable. And Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York State, has distinguished herself, continuing to fight against leading Democrats like Claire McCaskill from Missouri and Carl Levin from Michigan, who say, no, you can't disturb the chain of command. You have to let the military handle this internally. They have failed. They continue to fail. And Gillibrand is right. And when this bill goes over to the Senate next week, they will be forced to pass this because they can't leave town without funding the war machine. Every elected leader of each party buys into that. And so Gillibrand is going to try to force the issue that sexual assaults must be taken out of the chain of command and handled by independent prosecutors. I hope she prevails. An American journalist, Luke Summers, is under a 72-hour death threat in Yemen. And the fighters there, who the United States says are an affiliate of Al-Qaeda and labeled AQAP, Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, they posted a video with Luke Summers on Wednesday and said that they may kill him within 3 days. They're demanding that the United States not conduct any other commando raids to try to recover him. And recently, SEAL Team something or other, together with some Yemeni troops, tried to locate and rescue Luke Summers in a remote area near the border with Saudi Arabia. And while they did rescue some individuals from other nations, Britain, South Africa, and Turkey, Summers apparently had been spirited away, and they were unable to recover him. And now that they're not threatening to behead him, and, you know, as I've pointed out before, while beheading is really gruesome, a death is a death, and it appears they are poised to carry out that threat. Meanwhile, in Iran, the American dual citizen Jason Rezaian, who was a correspondent for the Washington Post until he was jailed on July 22nd of this year, continues to be imprisoned without charge or real explanation. And his brother said that they have now extended the detention order for at least 2 months. And this is all very murky because, again, we don't know exactly why he's being held. There were some remarks that it appeared he might be released if there had been a settlement worked out in the nuclear talks between the six nations and Iran. And so Razayan remains incarcerated. They have relaxed the restrictions a little bit, and his wife, who had been held but was later freed after 2 months, she has been permitted to visit him on a weekly basis. So that's a little bit more humane than the treatment he was initially receiving. Every day I like to mention some of the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast by subscribing. People like Aaron Blair, Judy Holloway, Steve Wozenski, Deborah Kennedy. They're all monthly subscribers who kick in $5. And if you're solvent, I always like to exclude anybody who listens to this free podcast and is on a limited income. You can continue to ride for free. All right? No guilt, no shame, no problem. But you with a little money in the bank and a job and a, you know, weekly paycheck and a little extra cash, I'm talking to you. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Under my mugshot, click on the link that says sign up. The next page lets you choose $5, $10, $20 a month or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers anywhere in the world qualify for our bonus gift right now, which is an electronic book, an e-book copy of Pepe Escobar's powerful new collection of columns called Empire of Chaos. I would love to send it along to you. And let me put out the appeal. Nobody has signed up for a new subscription this week at all. So I hope you'll break that streak. And I'd love to see, make my weekend, okay? We recently reported to you that some courageous judges across the country have spoken up and issued orders condemning outrageous government conduct in sting operations run by the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and the FBI. And they call these traps stash house operations. Do I have that right? Yeah, stash house. And what they do is they dangle an opportunity like to intercept a big drug shipment in front of people who hadn't planned to commit a crime. Often they provide the means, sometimes the guns. They set these guys up and then they knock them over. No actual drugs are purchased. It's all just a ruse. I consider it entrapment. And I agree with the judge, Otis Wright, who dismissed charges against two defendants, describing the ATF as trawling for crooks in seedy, poverty-ridden areas, all without an iota of suspicion that any particular person has committed similar conduct in the past. In a separate case here in California, a judge made a similar finding that the agency had violated fundamental fairness. And judges in Chicago questioned whether stings like this had illegally targeted black and Hispanic people who are the predominant groups affected. And so now, a federal appeals court has overturned that decision right here at the uber-liberal Ninth Circuit in San Francisco. And they've decided to reassign the case in question away from Judge Otis D. Wright. Why? Is it inconvenient that he views the law in a way that's critical of government overreach? And therefore, we're just going to bounce him? I consider that to be outrageous government conduct by the appeals court. And this comes as today's New York Times includes a story about more of these operations, including one in November. Here are the details. Seven members of an armed crew from Philadelphia were arrested in New York City on West 131st Street as they prepared to rob a large drug shipment they had been told had arrived from Texas via Miami. The authorities seized three guns, a knife, gloves, and masks. Now, there were no drugs. This was all just a concoction by the government. And how far should we allow the government to go in creating crime situations and inducing people to get involved? I think a line has been crossed. But at least a three-judge panel on the Ninth Circuit here in San Francisco thinks it's all okay. Are Democrats irrelevant? Well, that's a question. It also reflects comments that you may recall I made right here on this podcast on the day after the huge loss Democrats suffered in the midterm election in November. In an in-depth interview released to my subscribers today, I talk with Dave Johnson. He's a progressive, a Democrat, and he's a fellow at the Campaign for America's Future. That's a progressive think tank in Washington, run by Bob Borisage and Roger Hickey. And I met Dave back during the Bush era when the Campaign for America's Future held annual conferences called Take Back America in D.C. And we would go and set up Radio Row and interview a lot of the people there. Dave Johnson is one of the interesting critical thinkers who I met, and I will link to his article, which was posted this week at truthout.org, where he posed the question, is the Democratic Party relevant anymore? Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Dave Johnson.
This DC-centric, neoliberal, corporate-based side of the Democratic Party is what is killing the Democratic Party and making them irrelevant to people out here because it does not help regular people's lives get better when they get those people in that do those sorts of things. And so I think we're seeing the culmination of many years of this. Started in the 80s, you know, when mm-hmm. Clinton, I don't think Clinton had a choice at the time with his triangulation, but look where we are now from keeping it going. So the Democratic Party made themselves irrelevant in this last election. And what they have to do something about it now is to start doing what it takes, like Obama, after the election. He comes out for net neutrality. A lot of Democrats now, you know, we now have what they call the Hell No Caucus with this guy, I forgot his first name, is it Antonio Weiss? Obama's nominating another Goldman Sachs or something or other. Oh, he comes out of Lazard to run a part of the Treasury Department. And it started with Elizabeth Warren saying, mm-hmm. hell no, wait a minute. We got to stop putting these Wall Street people in charge of the economy like this. It's not helpful. And now we're getting a number of Democrats joining up. Sherrod Brown, Bernie Sanders, of course, he's an independent,
mm-hmm.
And several others are coming in and saying, okay, this is enough. Enough is enough. So a lot of people are starting to get it now that the Democrats have to start watching out for the interests of Main Street, of regular people, and stop trying to be Pepsi Light, Republican Light, neoliberal out there, trying to say the trickle-down Reaganomics, et cetera, is somehow good for us. It's time now for them to move back, to help working people, to help unions, to help the people at Walmart, to help the low end of our economy, because actually that's what makes the whole economy work.
You can hear the full interview with Dave Johnson. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. Senator Ron Wyden, the Democrat from Oregon who sits on the Intelligence Committee, has introduced a bill to prevent federal agencies from forcing tech companies to build backdoors into products, software, and networks. Wyden said in a statement, strong encryption and sound computer security is the best way to keep Americans' data safe from hackers and foreign threats. It's the best way to protect our constitutional rights at a time when a person's whole life can often be found on his or her smartphone. And strong computer security can rebuild consumer trust that's been shaken by years of, I'm inserting my comments here, abuse by intelligence agencies. The bill is fairly simple, 2 pages long. First section prohibits intelligence agencies from mandating that a company alter the security functions of covered products to provide for access by a government agency. And the other section allowing exceptions for mandates authorized under the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act that was passed back in 1994. Now, the confrontation looming is with the FBI, where its too tall director, James Comey, has publicly criticized the efforts of companies like Apple and Google to improve security in the wake of the Ed Snowden disclosures. I just find it fascinating that the head of the FBI thinks that he should be able to access your data without a warrant. without probable cause. And the language of the Fourth Amendment is so crystal clear that it would be stunning to, you know, see this position if it weren't so normal in today's bizarre climate. So we'll see how Ron Wyden does with that. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C. this week, a fairly respected jurist with a strong conservative bent, Richard Posner, who sits on the appeals court in Chicago, made some comments that I think are pretty outrageous. He says the NSA should have unlimited ability to collect digital information in order to protect us against terrorism and other threats. Posner says, much of what passes for the name of privacy is really just trying to conceal the disreputable parts of your conduct. Privacy is mainly about trying to improve your social and business opportunities by concealing the sorts of bad activities that would cause other people not to want to deal with you. Wow. That is remarkable. Because an American's right to privacy is not only to prevent you from finding out, well, that I like wine or that I watch porn or, you know, things that you might consider bad habits or, you know, less than righteous. We're talking about the mass surveillance of millions of innocent people. And the government's ability to encroach on our privacy has increased exponentially with technology. Posner says, in the name of national security, lawmakers should give the NSA carte blanche. Privacy interests should really have very little weight when you're talking about national security. Man. That's why things are so, so difficult these days. And let me end with this one. A mystery surfaced this week when we learned that NASA, which, by the way, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration has no direct connections to the Pentagon, a NASA official confirmed that one of the agency's three high-altitude aircraft has been spotted on an American military airstrip in eastern Africa and apparently was deployed there from July until November. The type of plane is called a WB-57. And this one in particular, for my plane-spotting friends, is number 926. And it was deployed in Djibouti for that period, July to November. And Djibouti is not one of the 14 international deployment sites for the aircraft in the NASA guidebook. So, it's only a question. I don't have the answer. I wish I did. But do we have a kind of mission creep where the military has become so powerful that it can force the non-lethal government agency NASA to get involved in some sort of a surveillance operation? I know some of my listeners have theories about chemtrails and geoengineering. I want you to know that I follow that stuff from time to time, and I've yet to find a compelling, credible source for the rather interesting allegations that have developed over the years that our government has a very elaborate scheme to try to control the weather, modify the weather, weaponize the weather, using chemical additives that are sprayed by airplanes and produce these visible chemtrails. And so let me ask my people who are deep into the chemtrail theories to weigh in. And if you know what these NASA high-altitude observational planes are used for, we're told they're just for research. But if this ties into any of the data that you may have collected about chemtrails and that whole field, feel free to email me information, peter@peterbcollins.com, and I'll take a look And if I think it's interesting enough and accurate enough, I will share it with our listeners. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. You are authorized to share this podcast with absolutely everyone. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.